The title of the shiur this morning is, Can You Be a Good Jew and a Good American? And I want to share with you some thoughts about how I approach this question, how we might want to think about this question as both Americans and as Jews. And the first thing I'd like you to do is just look for a moment at the image on the front of the source sheet. So this image is an Austrian postcard from 1919. The image is grotesque, and it's unmistakable. A caricature Jew, knife in hand, stabbing a German soldier in the back. The message is chillingly clear. Germany, the postcard insists, did not lose the war on the battlefield. It was betrayed from within. And the traitor, it claims, was the Jew. The postcard captures, in a single image, one of the oldest and most dangerous accusations ever leveled against the Jew. And that is dual loyalty. The claim that Jews cannot be trusted as citizens because their true allegiance lies elsewhere, to their religion, to their people, or to another land. And at its core is a powerful and poisonous idea that it is impossible to hold more than one deep commitment, and that Jewish identity itself is proof of betrayal. This accusation is ancient, and this accusation is deadly. In the Middle Ages, Jews were accused of poisoning wells, of murdering Christian children, and conspiring against Christian society. Even after emancipation, so that suspicion did not disappear. When Napoleon granted French Jews equal rights, he demanded assurances that they would not become, quote, a nation within a nation. In 1840, during the Damascus Affair, Jews were falsely accused of ritual murder. And French Jews who sought to help their fellow Jews abroad were told that this concern itself proved that they were not loyal Frenchmen. The same logic resurfaced in the Dreyfus Affair when Alfred Dreyfus's Jewishness was treated as evidence of treason. After World War I, Jews were blamed for Germany's defeat, accused of having, quote, stabbed the nation in the back, unquote. The Nazis would later transform that image into ideology with catastrophic consequences. And the accusation did not disappear after the Holocaust. It simply changed its language. Stalin branded Jews ruthless cosmopolitans. Jews in Arab lands were attacked as Zionist traitors. After the creation of the State of Israel, Jews in Egypt, in countries like Egypt, were arrested as enemy agents, regardless of their actual citizenship or loyalty. Today, the language is probably a little more polished, but the structure is familiar. Claims about the Jewish lobby or demands that Jewish students publicly renounce or denounce Israel in order to participate in full campus life rest on the same assumption, that Jews are loyal to something foreign. That is where anti-Zionism can slide into anti-Semitism. Not every criticism of Israel, but with the presumption that Jews must prove their loyalty by renouncing a central part of their identity. This is not a claim about actions, it's a claim about belonging, which brings us to the central question of the shiur. Can you be both a good Jew and a good American? Can deep Jewish commitment, including connection to Israel, coexist with genuine civic loyalty? Or is Jewish identity itself endlessly recast as a source of suspicion? To answer this question, we first must ask a deeper one. What does Judaism itself say about citizenship and loyalty? Do we begin with something fundamental and often overlooked? Judaism requires Jews to be law-abiding citizens. The Gemara articulates this principle in the Gemara in Meseches Gittin Daf Yud Amud Beis Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, "Dina de Malchusa Dina." The law of the land is binding. This is Shmuel establishes that civil law enacted by a legitimate government carries halachic force. Obeying laws according to Jewish tradition, according to halacha, is not merely pragmatic. It's actually a religious obligation. Now, Chazal are careful, and the Rishonim are careful to define its limits. And anyone, I want to share with you what they got from the Tashbates. I brought you a source from the Tashbates of the Rambam, how they limit the obligation to follow the law of the land. Any thoughts when you read the Tashbates, the Rambam? Any limits that they give? Do you always have to follow the law of the land? What?
It doesn't affect
what?
It doesn't affect what we're doing as Yidden.
Right. So number one, so the Tashbates writes that if they tell you, the Tashbates writes that Dina Machosodina primarily applies to matters of governance and finance. Right? It does not permit violations of Jewish law. So for example, if you if a secular law tells you you can't keep Shabbos or you have to eat non-kosher food, there's no halachic obligation to follow the law of the land. What is the Rambam? Anyone forget the Rambam? The Rambam limits also the principle of Dina the Machlus Adina. Don't be shy. I mean, in my class, I do call on people, so I'm just... What? Right. So law cannot be... He saved all of you, by the way. You're all nervous there for a second. So right. So the Rambam writes that the law cannot be discriminatory. Right? Now, there is if the court of the Rambam, if the government promulgates, let's say, a Jew tax, so every Jew has to pay a certain amount, that you don't have to do. If the law is discriminatory, so then you don't have to follow the law. But that lacks halachic legitimacy. But taken together, these sources, I believe, teach something very powerful. Judaism demands civic responsibility, but not moral surrender. And that leads, I think, to a striking conclusion. The very tradition accused of producing disloyal citizens insists on lawful, responsible participation in civic life. If the question is whether you can be a good Jew and a good American, halacha's answer begins here. You cannot be a good Jew without taking the law of the land seriously. But I believe, though, that we have to go a step further. Because being a law-abiding Jew is not the same thing as being, let's say, a loyal American. Being a law-abiding American is different than saying, I want to be a loyal American. What does loyalty imply? If I say, okay, I'm simply following the law, if you want to say you should be a loyal American, what does loyalty imply? When you think of loyalty, what does that imply? More than simply following the law. What?
Sacrifice.
Good. Anything else? Other thoughts? What? When you hear that someone is loyal, they're not simply following laws. What are they doing? They're sacrificing.
Wow. Well, it's either or prioritizing.
Okay, so maybe you're prioritizing one or the... Okay, so we can talk about priority in a bit. I think loyalty implies care. Loyalty implies responsibility, sacrifice. Loyalty implies commitment to the well-being of American society. Now, if halacha just says, the Torah just simply says, you have to follow the law, yeah, you have to follow the law for, we can think of a variety of reasons. But loyalty requires care, commitment. The question is, what does the Torah have to say about care and commitment for the broader society? So, and then we have to ask the question, are Jews merely compliant citizens, or are we genuinely loyal ones? Now, what's interesting is that Jewish sources initially seem to frame civic responsibility in practical terms. So I brought for you, this is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was the prophet, was a Navi who preached doom and gloom, that the base of Israel is going to be destroyed. And then, so he preaches that, and after the base of Israel is destroyed, so then he tries to comfort them. And he tells them in Perek Chavtes, Pasuk Zayin, V'dirshu Shloma Ir Asher Iglesi Eschem Shama, and you should seek the welfare of the city which I have exiled you. V'spalu Bada, you should pray. You should pray for the city that I'm exiling you to. What's the reason, if you look at this Pasuk Yirmiyahu, what's the reason that Yirmiyahu tells us to pray for the city that we are being exiled to. What's the reason? What does he say? Right, so if you have to, so there'll be peace there, then what will happen? You'll have peace as well. What's that called? Self-interest. Okay? In other words, the way, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, the way he's framing why we should pray, I'm sure many of you go to shuls that pray for the government. So the question, why do we pray for the government? So the way at least Sefer Yirmiyahu is formulating it is that it's for self-interest. If the government, the city is in peace, so it'll be good for you. Right? And in fact, perhaps we can read that also in Mishnah Pirkei Avos, in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Beis, Rabbi Chanina Skada Kohan, Rabbi Chanina, the I guess the understudy of the Kohanim, the second in command, Hevi Omer, Hevi Mispalo B'Shlomo Shel Malchus. He says we should daven, we should pray for the government. And by the way, he's living in Roman times. The Roman government wasn't necessarily the best friend to the Jews, but he said still pray for the government. Sheomole Mora. That if there was no fear of the government, Ish Esreu Chaim Bala'o, that everyone would swallow his neighbor alive. Again, the simple understanding is also self-interest. Pray that that the government, that society around you is peaceful, so it'll be good for you. However, what does Rabbeinu Yoda say? Rabbeinu Yoda, the way he interprets the Mishnah, he's saying a little bit differently. If you look at the last few words of Rabbeinu Yoda, he says a person should daven, should pray for Lao Shlom Kolam. Person should pray for the welfare of the whole world. Why? You should feel the pain of others. So now we're beginning to hear about something more. We're beginning to hear about a responsibility of care, of concern, to feel the pain of others. More than simply being a law-abiding citizen, but also being someone that cares about the society around us. Prayer for the government, according to Rabbeinu Yona, becomes an act of moral responsibility, not merely enlightened self-interest. Judaism, according to Rabbeinu Yona, does not ask us to stand apart from society. It demands that we care about society. Now, Judaism is unapologetic about one thing. Our highest loyalty is to Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's no question about that. Good Jew, good American, our highest loyalty is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That covenant, that responsibility towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu transcends geography, politics, and borders. But Jewish thinkers consistently rejected the idea that covenantal loyalty, loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, requires civic withdrawal. And I brought you two different sources from relatively modern thinkers, Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rav Shipshon Raphael Hirsch. Rav Soloveitchik's piece is a famous essay that he wrote called Confrontation, and there he discusses the limits of theological dialogue. He was not in favor of having Jews dialogue with non-Jews about matters of theology. It's a topic for a separate shiur. But in this essay, he writes that when it comes to, fine, maybe theology we don't discuss, we don't debate with other religions. However, he insisted that Jews must engage fully with society on matters of shared human concern, justice, dignity, and the alleviation of suffering. Our responsibility, he says, to humanity shares from a very basic principle called Tzelem Elohim, the belief that every human being, Jew and non-Jew, was created in God's image. And Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, I believe, actually goes a little further in the language that he uses. He speaks of an obligation, the middle of this passage that I shared with you, that he says, in the middle, he says, this outward obedience to the laws must be joined by the inner obedience, to be loyal to the state with heart and mind, loyal to the kings to guard the honor of the state with love and pride, to strive with enthusiasm whenever and whenever you can, so the nation's institutions shall prosper. For Rav Hirsch, we have to feel with state, with heart and mind, a sense of commitment to contribute wisdom, energy, and even sacrifice for the common good. Judaism does not permit retreat. Judaism demands engagement. And by the way, I think this is where America is fundamentally different. Because maybe until the past few hundred years, we may have had as Jews, because of the host country, the countries that hosted us, we may have had more limited opportunities to practice this value. For most of Jewish history, at least in the Golos, after we were exiled through the structure of the second Beis Hamikdash, Jews lived at best, as tolerated outsiders. Even when we were permitted to remain, we were rarely seen as equals. Jewish loyalty was suspect precisely because Jews were never fully included. And America changed that. From its founding, the United States did not merely tolerate Jews. It recognized Jews in principle as full and equal citizens. Jews were not asked to shed their faith in order to belong. They were invited to shape society itself. And I think that distinction matters, not in terms of obligation, but in terms of opportunity. We are not simply Jews living in a host country that allows religious practice. We are participants in the civic project. That gives us both the opportunity and the responsibility to contribute to the moral and social well-being of the country in which we live. America is founded on principles that resonate deeply with Torah values, human dignity, equality before the law, and religious freedom. When a society reflects those ideals, Jewish loyalty is not a compromise. It is an expression of our values. In America, being a committed Jew and a committed citizen is not a contradiction. It is a privilege and a responsibility. Being a good Jew and a good American is not only about compliance. It is about caring deeply and about acting responsibly. So the final point I want to address is this. How do we navigate, at the end of the day, multiple commitments? Well, we have commitments as Jews. We have commitments as Americans. How do we try to navigate that? How can you be, perhaps, if the conflict, how do you sort of navigate loyalty as a Jew, loyalty as an American? So I brought you in the very last page, I brought you two different Gemaras. One's a Gemara about tzedakah, and one's a Gemara about tochacha. One's a Gemara about giving charity, and one's a Gemara about rebuke. So how might, I don't know if any of you got to these sources, in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Ayin Aleph Amid Aleph, how might this Gemara about tzedakah impact our understanding of how we balance navigate our relationship between being American and being a Jew? What principle does this Gemara stand for? The Gemara in Bava Metzia. Right? Tani Rav Yosef says, Im kesef tat, im kesef talves ami eso ani imach, vilen mani tenev my people, even to the poor who is with you, ami vegoi ami kodem. Why does it say ami? Because my people teaches you that even that if it's between you and a non-Jew who come to borrow money from you, you should give to a Jew first. Ani va'ashir, a poor person, a wealthy person. Ani kodem, a poor person comes first. Ani yechav, ani yirechav, your own perhaps between your city. Ani yechav, your city, and because your own poor people of your family and the poor people of your city. Ani yechav kodmim, poor people of your own family comes first. The poor people of your city versus another city. The poor people of your city come first. So how might we apply this principle to balancing Jewish and an American, I guess, responsibilities, commitments, loyalties? What? How would we frame our responsibility here? What would you say based on this? Thoughts? What would you say? What would you think? Thoughts? No?
We identify as Jews and then as Americans?
Right. In other words, I think that this stands for the principle of priority. That it's okay to say you could have multiple commitments and your priority would be towards Jews. Now, by the way, when it comes to tzedakah, we know, and many posts can talk about this, even though there are priorities, it doesn't mean that you have to give all of your money to priority number one. It means that it takes priority, but it's not an all or nothing. It means that, generally speaking, your priority should be who's ever higher on the totem pole. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Daled Amud Beis, says the following. Kol mi she'efshar limchos la'anshei beiso v'lo micha, nitpas la'anshei beiso. Anyone who has the opportunity, the possibility to protest the behavior of people in his house, so they don't, then they're held responsible. If you see someone in your household doing something inappropriate, and you have the ability to protest and you don't, you're held responsible partially, even if you do nothing. Banche Iro, if you have the ability to protest the people of the city and you don't, Nitbas Alanche Iro, you're held responsible for their behavior. Nitbacholom Kulo, if you have the ability to protest the behavior of the whole world and you don't, Nitbas Alkolom Kulo, you're held responsible. So what does this Gemara stand for? Your responsibility is limited, depends on what? Tikkun Olam, right? So number one, this Gemara clearly states that we have responsibility for the broader world, even to non-Jews. And what might it depend on? The ability, the effectiveness. And I think, at least the way that I look at this, if we're to ask ourselves, how do we navigate multiple commitments? I think Judaism offers two guiding principles. The first is priority. Responsibility begins with family, extends to community, and then outward to the broader world. Jews are bound to one another as family. The second, I think, is effectiveness. Responsibility follows the ability to make a meaningful difference. Rabbi Norman Lam, Zatzal, former president of YU, in a drasha, he termed these dual loyalties, or how to navigate them, as what he calls enlightened self-interest. And he quoted the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, says, I have to look at this. Im ein ani li mi li, if I'm not to myself, who am I? Ushani la'atzmi mani. If I'm only to myself, what am I? In other words, it's a combination of both. Both parts matter. The framework clarifies, I think, difficult questions. Jews may, and I think should, serve their country if they have the means and the ability to do so, as politicians, judges, policemen, public servants, advancing American values and ideals that resonate deeply with Torah values, justice, human dignity, and the rule of law. Meaning, it's a Torah value to be a public servant, to be a public American servant. At the same time, a deep and enduring responsibility to the Jewish people, including the State of Israel, remains both legitimate and necessary. And that is why I believe that the charge of dual loyalty misses the point. We do not have divided loyalties. We have one ultimate loyalty, and that is Kadosh Baruch Hu, to God. And God commands us to be responsible, caring, and engaged in the world. In the earliest 20th century, when many American Jews feared that Zionism would raise questions of loyalty, Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis stood proudly as a Zionist. And he argued in the source they have in the bottom here and in other speeches that Zionism was not a threat to American identity, but an expression of it, because American ideals are broad enough to sustain layered commitments. The accusation of dual loyalty assumes that Jews undermine the societies in which they live. Judaism rejects that premise outright. Halacha demands lawful behavior. Jewish ethics demand moral engagement. And America's founding principles invite Jewish participation, not suspicion. Our loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not weaken our civic responsibility. It gives it meaning. And so the answer to our question is neither hesitant nor apologetic. Yes, you can be both a good Jew and a good American. Not despite Judaism, but because of it. Thank you.